Welcome back to the Open Source Startup Podcast. I'm Robbie from Cowboy Ventures, joined by my co-host, Tim Chen of Essence VC, who's looking very tan today, fresh back from vacation and back on the podcast grind. And today, we are so excited to have Pranay Pateek, and he's going to talk a bit about Cygnoz, which is the company that he co-founded. It is an open source observability platform taking on the likes of Datadog and New Relic. So welcome, Pranay. We're really excited to have you on.
Hey, thanks, Robbie, for having me. And yeah, really excited to chat more.
Awesome. Well, this is one of my favorite ways to find podcast guests when I reach out to awesome founders and they say that their seed round is closed, so I can't invest, but they're still interested in talking to us on the platform. So why don't you go all the way back and tell us about where the idea for Cygnoz came from and we can go from there.
Yeah, sure. So the idea primarily came when I was leading product teams here, and it was like mid-stage startup, and I had the engineering team reporting into me. And we faced this problem that, hey, when something breaks, it's a hair in fire problem. I was leading the product team, and the customer care team would start calling me that, hey, something is breaking. My customer payments are not going through. What do I do? Right? And then I would call my head of engineering and say, hey, what's up? Right? And then we'll figure out that, hey, something is wrong in the infrastructure, but we don't know what. And we'll get together in a war room, 8 engineers, 9 engineers, trying to figure out what's wrong, right? And at that time, we didn't have good observability tools in the startup in place. We were trying to do some Prometheus, but we're not able to find good people to set up Prometheus correctly. And Elastic was difficult to scale. It would often break down. So yeah, we thought that, hey, like, this seems like a very important problem. Why are there not better solutions out there to solve this, right? And that's when I got to know about this problem that, hey, there's something called observability or application monitoring. I was not aware of this field. And this got me really intrigued that, hey, like, now most of the company's value is in the software they produce, right? Like, even a delivery company, the most of the value is in the software and the IP there. And running the software well is of critical importance. Then how do you monitor what is running is also as important, right? It's like trying to understand what's going into infrastructure. So fundamentally, from a problem statement point, it seemed very interesting to us. So me and my co-founder, Ankit, he is also like engineering background, very hardcore into like designing systems. We thought that, hey, like, there needs to be a better solution out there. And this problem seems to be something which would go on increasing. Like, this is, as VC said, that the market size is going to increase. This problem will become more and more important. So that's where I started researching more about this. We thought that there are tools like Datadog and Irlig out there, but for many companies, like for companies like us, we're not allowed to sort of create accounts there because it was too costly. And also, like, you needed to create accounts there to get started, right? And as developer ourselves, we always wanted to sort of start playing with open source stuff. So we actually started to, like, our initial prototype was to build something on top of Grafana. Like, can we build something like APM metrics or APM dashboards on Grafana? But that didn't really come out as, like, we're not able to build what we wanted. Like, if you compare what Datadog provides compared to what you can build it at Grafana at that time was very different. And fundamentally, Grafana was started as a dashboarding tool. It was not meant for observability. It's now being used in many places for observability, but fundamentally, it's a dashboarding tool, right? So that's where we primarily the idea started that, hey, can we build something ground up, which is built for observability, built in open source, and has all the three signals together, which is like in observability, the key three signals are metrics, traces, and logs. And we always thought that having all of these things in a single piece of software is very important because whenever such problems happen, it's always a hair and fire problem. We want to solve it very fast. And being able to correlate across signals is very important. So yeah, I think that's where I started building something in a single pane of glass in open source, built natively for observability.
I'm quite intrigued about the journey of you building this because, you know, what I usually do actually with a lot of our guests is we kind of walk in history, what actually has started and what actually worked. And you have a lot of content, a lot of blog posts. That's definitely what I noticed. Reading your first post, why you built Cygnoz, and then the second post of the genesis of Cygnoz, it already sounds quite different. So I'm actually very curious, like, what was the initial thought of what you thought will be your product going in? This is back in 19, looks like. I noticed three words you use a lot is proactive. I want to be able to tell you what has happened. that has been like microservice observability platform since this where you started and users were like proactively able to tell you what's wrong, reactively able to like remediate potentially some issues. It seems like that's kind of where you are. And then in 2020, suddenly you talking about like scalability, metrics and traces to be together and we need to have a better implementation. So kind of walk through some of the journey there. Like what was the initial thought going into building a Signals to product and what kind of have evolved? What have you really realized and learned during that journey to sort of like iterate and change your like product focus?
Yeah, sure. I think the first thing which we wanted to build was something on top of like using Grafana and the dashboard and be able to get APM metrics out of the box. So if you know about Grafana, you can get like infrastructure metrics very easily, like things like CPU, memory, etc. But it's not as easy to find application metrics, which is what basically application performance monitoring is, which is like things like latencies of an application, error rates, response rate, etc., right? That's where we essentially started. We thought that there's a lot of gap between what is should be there in open source compared to like what is already there. And what, as I was saying earlier, what we discovered was that it's not easy, at least at that point, it was not easy to build APM metrics, right? Like, and APM is primarily powered by distributed tracing. And that essentially becomes more and more important, primarily in the microservices world. Like if you have multiple services talking to each other and you want to understand like what's happening between them, that's where the main role of distributed tracing is. So yeah, essentially, if you think about it, we started there where like focusing more on APM, trying to build dashboards on that. And then even our first product, like which we launched, like we were part of YC in March 2021 batch. And then when we started out of that, our first product was APM, basically being able to get application metrics out of the box very easily. What we discovered, or like what sort of the users of Signals pushed us to, is that, hey, like APM is good, but that's like one part of the problem which they need to be solved. They also need to have logs in place. They also need to have infra metrics in place. And essentially, that's what we heard from many users, that, hey, like APM is good, but we also do logs. I don't want to run another Elastic cluster. And that's where we sort of started thinking of the product as a platform where you have all the three signals in place, where like you have APM powered by distributed tracing, you have distributed tracing where you can ask any questions primarily around any type of events you get, application data. You have logs, which can be sent from different type of applications, and then metrics, which is either around infrastructure metrics or any custom metrics, right? So yeah, that from a product standpoint, that has been our journey. And being able to correlate across this tightly, that, hey, like if you see a trace, like a latency getting high, how do you go from there to say, what are the logs which are fired during that time? And essentially solving the problem that it helps our users solve any issues faster. Yeah, so that has sort of been the broad arc line we had.
So you're in YC, and you walked through some of the early journey around decision on whether or not to build through Grafana or not. Can you talk a bit about your view on OpenTelemetry and why that framework made sense? For a bit of history, so our fund was invested in Lightstep, Ben's team. And when that came out, I don't think we could have predicted that it would have been so widely adopted. But like, can you walk us through what your thinking was on why that made sense for Signals?
Yeah, so this is like early 2021. And that's when we're deciding that, hey, like it seems that we have to have all the signals in one place. But tracing is something which we wanted to pick first, because that there was a lot gap between what was available in open source versus what was commercially available. And we stumbled upon this project called OpenTelemetry. And as developers, that sort of made a lot of intuitive sense to us, because it said that you don't need to have proprietary SDK in your code, because that makes changing your backend visualization vendor tough, right? And if you think logically, right, like you always want to have flexibility of which backend visualization layer you want to choose. If you add a particular SDK of a proprietary vendor, then you're locked to their platform, and then like whatever price they charge or whatever the feature they can offer. Basically, that sort of reduces the set of innovations you can access to that vendor, right? While OpenTelemetry, because of this common data format, opens that up a lot. So it was actually a bet at that time, because at that time it was very early project, as you're saying. Nobody knew that it would be the default sort of SDK, which now it is becoming to be. But I think to us, it made sense that this is something where the world should go. And fortunately, the world has sort of is going in that direction. So that has been proving a tailwind for us. But yeah, at that point, it was not clear. What also helped us was that OpenTelemetry has the best support for tracing to start with. And we also started with tracing as a main product where it started with. So sort of there was a natural fit there. And now OpenTelemetry is more mature for logs and metrics also. And we are also getting much more mature for logs and metrics. But the starting point that OpenTelemetry had good support, like among the three signals, best support for tracing. And we also wanted to address tracing for that, sort of made us a natural fit there.
I guess the big question that's really relevant to our podcast is, why do you open source signals in the first place? Like, a lot of monitoring companies, most of them are not open source at all. They probably open source only the clients or some kind of collector, something that runs on their customer side, but you decide to pretty much open source your product from day one. So tell us maybe the motivation for an open source and how did you think about your strategy around open source as well? Is this mainly for people to trust you only, or are you looking for contributors? What sort of thought process around it?
Yeah, I think the main driver for this was that both of us are developers, and we always thought and felt in our companies that when something is proprietary, it reduces how many people can try it or adopt it. Like, we would also start with an open source project first and try to tinker around with it and then play with it and then get access to it. It also helps us to learn a lot more about that domain and like what we can do there, because there's a community around it, right? So that was from a like practitioner perspective what we expected, that hey, that like being open source helps people adopt it much faster, get started with it faster. And the second piece, which sort of is the long-term view which we have, is that there should be a open source observability product which people use as default. Like, and that's sort of a view of the world which we think should be there, that hey, like, because this is a product which is used by developers, I don't think the biggest product in this category should be a proprietary product, which as of now is the case. And we want to change that. Like, hey, why is Datadog the biggest product in, or like the most popular product out there? It's used by developers. Developers love to play around with it. So there should be open source product which is built for observability and which should be as big as Datadog or even bigger than that, right? So that's sort of from a like long-term, like what we want the world to be. And just from a more tactical perspective, what we thought is that because we are using OpenTelemetry as the SDK, being an open source backend helped us to open up a lot of innovation on top of that and essentially make us more friendly for a lot of other integrations or like other products which leverage OpenTelemetry, right? So our view is that going forward, because OpenTelemetry makes it a common data format, we are seeing a lot more companies which are building many other type of things apart from observability on top of OpenTelemetry. Right? For example, there are companies which built integration test cases on top of it. There are companies which are monitoring generative AI applications on top of it. And if there is an open source backend like Signals, then that naturally becomes the natural tool which people will use. So it helps us get a lot of adoption from other tooling. Our goal is that, hey, can we make Signals the default backend and visualization layer which people use for OpenTelemetry? I guess the underlying thesis that we believe that it would get us more developers using the product and hence help us improve the product more. And the whole iteration cycle makes it much faster.
Can you talk to us a bit about why you need traces, logs, like you need an all-in-one platform versus having individual vendors for each? And also the types of companies that having like all-in-one together value prop really works for. And maybe you can talk a bit about who some of the early adopters of Signals were. And then we can move to who the adopters are today.
I think having all the three signals in one place helps you solve the issues faster, right? So the way we define the use case for this product or the jobs to be done for this product is that it should help you solve any issues which comes much faster and like give you proactive alerts on top of it. So if you have a problem and you're facing a like production issue, say, and as I said, like it's generally a hidden file issue. Everybody is like pinging you that, hey, like what's going wrong? Your customers are facing this issue. Your NPS is going down. You want it to be solved as soon as possible, right? At that point of time, you don't want to get stuck that, hey, like I have the traces data here. It is telling me this, but what happened at logs at that point? And then that is a different system and you sort of can't correlate it. So what happens if you have three different systems, for example, say logs, metrics, and traces, is that tying this together becomes very tough because you don't have a common identifier between them. So if you want to find, okay, this latency is higher, but what are the logs which are fired at that point, that becomes tougher. What happens with like having all the tools in all the signals in the same place is that, for example, in signals, you can go from today to a trace and then you can see related logs which fired at that time, right? And that essentially helps to solve any issues which come up very faster. So if something you would take like 10 minutes to solve, you would solve in 1 minute. Or maybe even you can't get those logs, right? So I think that's essentially what our product does. And to solve it well, it's very important to correlate across different signals, surface the data, like the related data together. And that's where like the real magic comes up on like, hey, how can you solve this faster, right? We started with, like, our product was most mature for traces first, and now it is like we have matured the logs and metrics past also more. But we started with getting lots of interest from an out-of-the-box APM product that, hey, I have the traces data, can you show me the APM metrics out of the box? And at that time, the only alternative was Jaeger, which was not focused too much on giving those APM metrics out of the box. So that's where we sort of got the main adoption. And yeah, just to recall some of the good companies we had, like there was a fintech company in India, 1,000+ people, Series D, Series E, and they were extensively using us, right? And then we started thinking that, hey, like if a big company like this is trying to use signals, then there's really a market gap here, and then can we build that, right? So we started from there, and now the key use cases we see is people who are sort of graduating from having, say, one signal, like, say some people have logs and then now they're thinking, hey, maybe I also need traces and what's a good platform to have all these three signals in one place. Maybe I have metrics, but I want to now also go to logs and traces and like try to see this unified view. So what's a good platform for that? So that's the type of users and customers we are seeing now where people would start with a single signal, but then when their business matures or their traffic increases or their use cases change, they want something which is all in one, and then they sort of discover signals and reach out to us or start using the product. So that is a typical journey we see today.
Awesome. So I think your ability to actually bundle all of these into one product, I think there's definitely increasingly we've seen there's a lot of APM vendors obviously in this space, and more people are actually adding more features. But you have a lot of posts comparing a lot of APM tools. Like notice from 2020, all even now, there's a lot of versus, you know, Jaeger versus something else, and even 21 APM tools all in one post. I'm sure this is a lot of conversations you have with your users and customers. So can you maybe talk about like, what are the few primary drivers for people to actually adopt Signals? Is open source a huge part of it? Like people like that I can actually see the code and that matters to your users? Is it the multiple features that you have? Is it the cost? Because you talk about data cost is quite high. Which one is like number one motivation that you typically see? Or is it pretty much all over the place?
I think the key reasons which we see are one, having all the three signals in one place in open source. So what that essentially does is it helps people get started with things much faster. Like we see many people just start using signals in their dev environment. And then when they want to do prod, then they reach out to us. And the second key reason has been OpenTelemetry, because like we don't have support any other SDK apart from OpenTelemetry, right? And we have like features in the product which are very native to OpenTelemetry, which like other vendors don't support or like doesn't make sense even for them to support because they are like their own SDKs to support, right? So what we're seeing is many people are now realizing that they have to start with OpenTelemetry to be future-proof. Many of engineering leaders have heard that story that, hey, like if you get vendor logged in, you have to pay the price in the future. So we are seeing even early stage startup, like 10 people company, 15 people company thinking about this, which actually earlier we thought that, hey, like maybe startups are not someone who would care about this because their goal is just to move fast, right? But what we are seeing is that these people who started these companies have actually come from other bigger companies who would have seen the pain of what has happened with them by getting locked into a proprietary SDK. And hence they are choosing to start with OpenTelemetry today, take a bit of more work in like setting things up, but sort of sets you up for a like much more scalable path in the future. So yeah, 3-in-1, OpenTelemetry, and just being much more cost effective in terms of like being based on modern data stores, right? So we are based on ClickHouse, which we think is much more suited for popularity use case compared to like other data stores like Elastic. And that sort of makes it much more efficient and hence like much more cost effective to run. Yeah. So these are the three reasons. Open source, you can try it easily. Being open telemetry native, 3-in-1 signals, and then being much more cost effective.
So about a year ago, it looks like there was pretty linear growth, at least on the open source. And then a year ago, it feels like things started to accelerate. Can you talk us a bit through like what happened? Were there certain pieces of content, releases? Was it just the project was around long enough and then suddenly it kind of had enough virality and like word of mouth? Like what's kind of happened in Cygnos's growth story? And is that right that about a year ago you felt this like change in momentum?
Yeah, I think about a year ago, around September, October, we launched our logs product. So before that, we were primarily tracers and metrics. And there was a lot of demand for logs. As I said, people were asking for that. And then we launched our logs product. We also published a PUF benchmark for logs compared to other open source tools like Elastic and Loki. And that sort of started getting people more attention. We were on Hacker News for some time, like front page of Hacker News for some time. I think fundamentally, because logs is like something which so many people just start with, it enabled a lot of more use cases for us compared to just APM, which like slightly more advanced users use. While logs is even early stage companies want to start using, or even developers, indie developers want to start using logs, right? So I think that is the one driver for that growth around last year, October or September.
So looking at, because I don't have your actual content analytics, you have a lot of blog posts. Can you talk about like which post really makes the biggest either virality or customer pull? And is there a particular kind that you really have found to have the most success? And which are ones that you actually find to be the least success? Really interesting to see both examples from your point of view.
Sure. I think we've tried a lot of things in content. What has worked most well is sort of deep technical content. For example, the PUF benchmark, which we published, had a lot of sort of people referring it, a lot of people coming to us after seeing that. We also did a lot of content around like open source Datadog alternatives, which is basically serving a market demand where people are looking for alternatives to Datadog. And that sort of pieces do quite well for us. I think the things which we don't work quite well has been top of the funnel content for us. So we tried a lot of things around like just general Kubernetes blogs, which are like not related to observability or monitoring, but just we're trying to target developers who are trying to learn about Kubernetes, right? That gets a decent amount of traffic, but that doesn't sort of generate much more interest, like going from there to downloading product or like starting to use Cygnos, right? So what we have realized is that there should be a mix in the type of content we produce, which is like we call it tofu, mofu, and bofu, which is top of the funnel, middle of the funnel, bottom of the funnel. And generally, we stick to like less top of the funnel and more mofu and bofu. And we want to do more there. Still, it's a very something which we are still learning about and thinking about. But yeah, like more technical content, which gets interest from developer, works much more compared to like more top of the funnel content, which like people come, they visit, but it doesn't lead to more actions from users.
So from what I can see from the, at least the Hacker News side, the post that has the most points and really spiked high is the maximizing scalability Apache Kafka and OpenTelemetry post, right? 181 points, at least from Cygnos submitted content, basically. Like everything else is like 10, 20.
I think Locks benchmark code is also one of the posts which did quite well.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. I'm just picking that one because at least from my quick scan, that seems spiked one of the highest. So is that a good example of a post that's just top of funnel? Have a lot of discussions, a lot of people coming visit?
It's a good post. Like it's not just top of the funnel. It's like deep content, like deep technical content. It has opinions, it has thoughts. So that's not top of the funnel. We would consider like middle of the funnel, sort of more technical. When I say top of the funnel content, it's like, hey, like what is Kubernetes logs or what are Kubernetes events, things like that. More of a very early stage developer who is sort of learning about Kubernetes, what they would want to learn about. So that's like top of the funnel. And the Kafka blog was actually it was something which we're seeing from our user community that, hey, like people are trying to understand how do we scale OpenTelemetry? Can we use Kafka? Can we not use Kafka? So a lot of the contents which you have seen has worked well is actually driven from conversations from our users and not from community. And if we understand that and write about it, that, hey, like, this is what users are actually discussing, and then we sort of take a long view and try to write a deep article about it, that works generally decently. Not all articles work, but it has a higher chance of success compared to other sort of articles.
Got it. So I think what I understand about funnel, your funnel is actually, we're talking more about your level of technical depth. To a certain degree, how familiar they are and how much they already maybe already built or know how to evaluate or some kind of system like that.
Yeah. So if you see Apache Kafka for OpenTelemetry, right? It's needed for users who have already run OpenTelemetry and now are looking to see how they can scale it, which is a different problem compared to, say, trying to understand, hey, what is OpenTelemetry, right? Yes. Which is like very top of the funnel. They're just trying to understand that, what is this, how we can use it, how can it be helpful? While this is for a persona which is using OpenTelemetry, have potentially set it up properly. Now their problem is, hey, how do I scale it?
Got it. So for you, those three funnels that you defined, is it important for you to focus on all three? Because I remember you say you really want to have more deeply technical content. But I think probably my impression or bias probably is these users probably have a harder time buying or using some other projects because they want to build themselves. Which funnel do you found to be the most valuable, I guess, in case from your side? I'm probably all valuable to a certain degree, but like which one has like the best value ROI for them in terms of engagement and understanding your product and using you?
Yeah, I think the way we look into this is like different type of kernel serve different use case for us. Top of the funnel is important also because it makes users aware about our project. And if they see us enough, they are likely to try us in the next project. So it's more of a from a awareness perspective. Middle of the funnel content is more around, hey, like, can Signals really scale? Or like, if they are actually evaluating different OpenTelemetry vendors or different OpenTelemetry tools to use, if they see content from Signals, which is quite deep, they think that, hey, like, these guys know what they're talking about, right? So it helps in sort of that evaluation phase. Even bottom of the funnel is, hey, like, how do I do specific things with this? Which essentially helps us in retention and deeper users of the product, right? If you think from a like ARR framework, right? Acquisition, activation, retention, revenue. So it sort of falls in line with that, that awareness and activation is by the top of the funnel. Activation and retention are from the middle of the funnel and more revenue, et cetera, is from the bottom of the funnel content. So I don't have a like answer like which is more important. It's all of them are important. It's all of sort of serves different part of the funnel.
I want to talk a bit about Signals Cloud. You actually use it in some of your marketing messaging around Signals is 90% less expensive than Datadog. So how did you think about pricing and making sure that you wouldn't fall into the trap that other observability vendors have fallen into where they end up being super expensive?
So from a pricing perspective, I think the one thing which we wanted to do was to make it simple and like easy to understand. And for us, that is like it should be users-based pricing. That, for example, if you look into other vendors, especially Datadog, they have a very complicated pricing structure. You have to price based on number of hosts, number of APM hosts, things like that. And that essentially doesn't make sense in today's environment. For example, Datadog charges based on the number of infra hosts which they want to monitor, right? And in today's microservices world, people can have a 2 GB RAM host and like they can have a 16 GB RAM host, right? Should they be charged same? What if there are like multiple pods getting spinned up? Like because in Kubernetes environment, you can just spin up different pods. And if they are in different hosts, would you get charged more versus like if they are all stacked in a single host? So essentially, I think host-based pricing doesn't make sense in today's world. And that's what we have kept it very simple that, hey, like it's just based on the amount of data you send us. Amount of data sent is essentially a reflection of how much value you are driving from the product and hence is a good sort of access for us to charge on. And in terms of like being cost effective, I think it's more of a thing that we want it to be able to pass the efficiency we have from our like data structure and like the data store which we use to our customers, right? Not it essentially inflated and keep things simple. I think that's where we are. Have users-based pricing, pass the efficiency to our customers. Because at the end of the day, especially in data infra projects, cost is a big driver of deciding the architecture you want to build out, right? Like, so it's not a like one-time thing, like it can't be easily replaced. So people think deeply about what your cost structure looks like today and how does it scale, right? So So that's what we want to do. We want to keep things simple, pass things to our customers, whatever efficiency we have, price based on what value they are driving on, not artificially based on the number of hosts which they run, number of pods which they run, which to us should be left to users on like what architecture they decide. Because we have seen users who run, for example, big host like 32 GB, 64 GB machines, if they want to just reduce the cost of APM and like have all machines in order. So in a way, APM cost is deciding your architecture, which to us doesn't make any sense.
Very cool. So I saw your post. You recently crossed 15,000 GitHub stars. So congratulations for that. You know, a lot of excitement things going on. And we haven't really talked a lot about your product side, I think. So curious, like, what is your thought process? You know, people can just download and use your project. But obviously, you also have your commercial products people will pay you for. So how do you delineate the line? What is what people pay for, what people don't? How you designed that product and what key lessons you learned even doing that?
Yeah, I think that is still a part of our experimentation. But as of now, what we want to, like we have two paid products. One is the Cygnos Cloud product where we host Cygnos for you. Basically, you don't need to host things yourself. And we have a proprietary like enterprise product which has some more features which is not there in the community edition. So we follow an open core business model there, where the core of the software is free and open source, but for things like compliance, RBAC, we have kept it in the enterprise product where people would need to pay to get a license and then use it, right? So essentially the thought process is to enable companies which are just using us for standard use case. Like if you just want to monitor your logs, you can just use Cygnos, right? If you just want to get API metrics, you can just use Cygnos. But if you want to get role-based access control on top of Cygnos and like have a lot of collaboration use case that, hey, like these people can use it, these people cannot use it, those type of things which we think are essentially needed for companies which are driving a lot of value from our product, and that we have kept in the enterprise tier, right? The idea is that essentially the smaller companies which are using us for simple use cases should be able to use us for free. But if you are deriving a lot of value using the advanced features in the product around compliance, security, and around RBAC, and like a lot of other things like using private link access, etc., then that should be in the paid product. Still in a work in progress, but like that's our current thought process.
And so can you talk a bit about your decision to raise your last round? I know you'd initially gone through YC. It seemed to coincide with the release of Cygnos Cloud. Like at the point in time when you're probably focusing more on driving that usage than previously. So yeah, walk us through kind of like what your fundraising journey has been like. Maybe what were some of the like easier and harder parts of it too?
Yeah, so I think one of the things which was not so intuitive for us, this is like across fundraising, not across like for this specific round, was that fundraising is essentially a sales process where you like talk to a lot of investors and one of them will say yes, and then essentially then a lot of investors will come in, right? And like, I've not done sales earlier, so it was not very intuitive for me. I've mostly been in product and tech. But yeah, one of the key learning is that if you treat fundraising as a sales funnel, that you have a top of the funnel there, and then some investors go ahead and out of them, one will write the check, then it's much easier because you'll get more no's than yes. And you only need one or two yeses to sort of close your round. Right. Yeah. So I think that's something which many founders don't like. It takes time to understand that. And also when you're talking to a big shot VC and when he says no, then you like you feel bad about yourself. You think that, hey, like is the product not good enough? Is the market not good enough? But yeah, like that is one of the lessons for us. And the other lesson has been that, hey, like you need to get one or two yeses. You don't need to get all yeses, right? Like you don't essentially need all VCs saying that, hey, like, take your money. And which in turn means that you should be able to handle rejection, which is not easy. But yeah, you need to get used to it. So yeah, I think from broader perspective, those have been some of the lessons from a fundraising perspective. And yeah, I think we decided to launch Cloud, I think, because we are seeing community demand from our users that, hey, like, do you have a hosted version? And can I just like sign up somewhere and get start to use the product? And when we started seeing this, we thought that, hey, like it's time that we should launch a cloud product. And yeah, that's essentially like tied up with this.
So usually the last question we ask all our founders is advice you give to other founders. And I think given your situation, I'll be very curious if there's maybe one advice you would give even yourself back in 2019, starting off Cygnos, you know, and this has been a journey, 4 years or more counting. what are things you would tell Pranay 4 years ago? Hey, this is what you should probably do to go faster. I wonder, is there any major lesson you learned this 4 years that you wish you could go back and do something different or change some things to go faster?
I don't know if I would know what I know today in retrospect, but for example, the data store which we used earlier. So we launched with Druid as a data store in the first version of Signals, and then we later moved to ClickHouse. What we didn't know at that time was that, so we knew that we have to use a columnar data format, but we didn't know that for open source adoption, you need to have it in a way which can run in a single machine by an individual developer in 15 minutes. So basically, if you have a data store which takes a lot of resources, which is what we found Druid needs to, it runs quite well at scale, but it's not so easy to run at, say, 4GB machine or 2GB machine. And that's why we, after the initial launch, we got a lot of feedback from the community, and then we moved to ClickHouse, which is much, much better in running at smaller scale, right? So one of the things which I think I tell all open source founders is optimize for single user experience, single developer experience running it on laptop on their single machine rather than having access to AWS cluster or big machines, right? And because even though your product is ultimately going to run in a Kubernetes cluster or at big scale, which is what is our case, still a developer needs to sort of be able to download the project, set it up and start seeing something in their dashboards in 30 minutes. That's essentially the time you have to sort of capture their attention. And then they decide that, hey, is it worth enough for me to spend more time? So optimizing for that first interaction, first 30 minutes to be able to provide that something, some aha moment is very important, right? And especially if you're an open source project, and we didn't have a cloud version from day one. So maybe if you have a cloud version from day one, that's a different story. But if you have an open source project which people need to run and download, optimize for the experience that it should be able to run in their machine in 30 minutes and be able to show them something which they think that, hey, this seems interesting and I want to invest more. For us, from our journey, this is important. So when we decided to choose the data store, we decided to choose a store which would scale well, but we didn't know this fact that, hey, to have the adoption of your open source project grow, you need to have this also figured out. So yeah, this is something the initial onboarding experience for developers is very important, most crucially important in the early stages of your product, especially if you don't launch with a cloud.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for doing this with us, Pranay. This was an awesome episode. I think a lot of folks will learn a ton from it.
Yeah, thanks for having me and thanks for asking such interesting questions.